Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again, and welcome back to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English skills. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Each day, we tell you interesting stories from around the world. We speak slowly and use words that are easy to understand. Today, we have a special program for you. It is all about some people from one of the highest places on Earth who have moved to the coast of Australia, a simple exercise that millions of people do every day, has special meaning for them. Jill Robbins joins us with the story.
Refugees from Tibet live in many countries around the world. Australia's largest community of Tibetan refugees is in a town just north of Sydney. Australia's east coast seems a world away from the Himalaya Mountains of Tibet. In their new home, hundreds of Tibetans are learning to swim, something they did not do back in Tibet. Swimming is an important safety skill for those living near the sea. It is also a good way for the refugees to improve their understanding of Australian culture. Waves crash on the beach in BY, a coastal town about 40 minutes north of Sydney. It is almost nightfall, but swimmers still are out in the waters of the Pacific Ocean. Seawater feeds a large swimming pool at one end of the beach. Many people swim, splash, and play here. They include adults and children from Tibet. DY is home to nearly 20,000 people, including more than 800 Tibetans. The refugees are slowly getting settled in their new home. The Australian government is paying for English classes and other training to help them. The refugees in DY are also learning to swim. About 300 Tibetans, including adults and children, have learned to swim through a program launched in 2012. A local nonprofit group called Water Skills for Life helped to organize the training. The next swimming class for Tibetans starts this month. Pasang Sering is a 40-year-old Tibetan who left India for Australia in 2008. He had never seen the ocean before arriving in Australia, just like most Tibetans in DY. But he learned to swim through Water Skills for Life, which also supports swim programs in Vietnam. Pasang Sering passed exams to become a swimming teacher himself. Now, he assists in the Tibetan swim program.
Most Tibetans don't know swimming, so I hope so I teach more Tibetan kids or the adults. We live near the ocean, so danger for life, so I should be learn.
The beach is an important part of Australian culture. Children usually learn to swim at a young age. But the ocean can be life-threatening to non-swimmers and to people who do not know about the risks of powerful currents and sharks. From 2013 to 2014, 266 people drown in Australia. Tanya Carmont is a swim teacher and president of Water Skills for Life. She says, many Tibetans who arrive in DY have little experience with or understanding of the ocean. She remembers how her first Tibetan students frightened her.
The Tibetans were very excited and very happy to be at the swimming center. And the first thing I notice is they just jump in. And that gave me the biggest scare of my life because none of them could swim. Tibetans, in general, are not afraid of the water. They love being near the ocean. They love going in the water, but they really don't know how to swim. And they get themselves into trouble down there. So having a swimming program designed for them to give them the water safety message and learn water safety skills is very, very important.
But she says their lack of knowledge could get them in serious trouble in the ocean. She says it is very important to have a swim program designed for them so they can learn water safety skills. The Tibetan program includes a 10-week swim class that costs just $15. It includes a general water safety training that educates people about ocean currents. Students learn what to do in an emergency and first aid treatments, like how to perform cardiopulmonary resuscitation, better known as CPR. A small book on water safety was published in the Tibetan language for people in the swim program and for students in public schools. Translating materials from English is difficult since the Tibetan language does not have expressions for words like rip current and CPR. Several years ago, some Tibetan students joined swim classes that Tanya Carmont teaches at community pools. She learned that there was a sizable community of Tibetans in DY and that they were eager to learn to swim. She developed the program with the Manli Community Center, a local social services office. The Australian government each year agrees to accept a set number of Tibetan refugees from India. In Australia today, there are about 1,200 Tibetans, and their numbers are growing. Learning to swim is an important safety skill. It also helps Tibetans mix in with Australian culture. Prabhu Kanyi Seng is the president of the Tibetan community in the state of New South Wales. As a community leader, he helps Tibetans get used to life in Australia.
Tibet and Australia, it's two different countries, you know. The Tibet is just a dryland mountain, snowy mountains. There's no like beach and oceans, you know. We have only rivers and lakes few. So when you come to Australia and it's all the boundary is like beaches, it is very important to learn the swimming and also basic important in swimming and their language, their culture.
Tanya Carmont says Tibetan refugees who learn to swim show that they are accepting the Australian way. And many are jumping right in, feet first. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is VOA, the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Cameroon has launched an $8 million emergency program to help students displaced by Boko Haram militants. The government last month announced plans to build classrooms and housing for 70,000 students. The children cannot attend their own schools because of militant attacks along the border with Nigeria. The classrooms will be in safer parts of Cameroon, far from the border area. Mijiyawa Bakari is the governor of the far north region of Cameroon. He told reporters that Boko Haram fighters destroyed 170 schools along the border with Nigeria. The students from that area fled to other areas of Cameroon. Mr. Bakari said schools in safer places can no longer provide for the increasing numbers of students. The governor has given out contracts to build classrooms, dormitories, and latrines.
Les opérateurs économiques qui ont une crédibilité pour que très rapidement dans un...
Mr. Bakari said he offered the work to businessmen he trusts. He wants them to complete the projects in 40 days so the children can go back to school. Businessman Nia Foncha was asked to supply electricity to the schools. He said the government has helped speed up the work by reducing the time it takes to get administrative approval. Mr. Foncha said his crews planned to bring electricity cables and poles to building sites. He expected 80% of the work to be completed within 3 weeks. The new school term is to begin in the second half of April. The government has sent the military to the sites. Ibrahim Joel Mahamat is the local delegate responsible for basic education in the far north region. He said nearly half of the displaced children are primary school students. An estimated 33,000 children have been displaced from primary schools on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Mr. Mahamat says he thinks that soon these boys and girls will have good classrooms so they can study in safer localities.
Il y a presque 33,000 élèves déplacés, ce qui est sûr.
The school children are among the 100,000 people who had to leave their homes since Boko Haram became active in Cameroon. The militant group is seeking to set up an Islamic State. I'm Jill Robbins.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The 1920s were a time of economic progress for most Americans. During the administrations of President Warren Harding and President Calvin Coolidge, many companies grew larger, creating new jobs. Wages for most Americans increased. Many people began to have enough money to buy new kinds of products. The strong economy
also created the right environment for many important changes in the day-to-day social life of Americans. The 1920s are remembered now as an exciting time that historians call the Roaring Twenties. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell more about that period.
The 1920s brought a feeling of freedom and independence to millions of Americans, especially young Americans. Young soldiers returned from the World War with new ideas. They had seen a different world in Europe. They had faced death and learned to enjoy the pleasures that each day offered. Many of these young soldiers were not willing to quietly accept the old traditions of their families and villages when they returned home. Instead, they wanted to try new ways of living.
Many young Americans, both men and women, began to challenge some of the traditions of their parents and grandparents. For example, some young women began to experiment with new kinds of clothes. They no longer wore dresses that hid the shape of their bodies. Instead, they wore thinner dresses that uncovered part of their legs. Many young women began to smoke cigarettes, too. Cigarette production in the United States more than doubled in the 10 years between 1918 and 1928. Many women also began to drink alcohol with men in public for the first time, and they listened together to a popular new kind of music, jazz. Young people danced the foxtrot, the Charleston, and other new dances. They held one another tightly on the dance floor, instead of dancing far apart.
It was a revolution in social values, at least among some Americans. People openly discussed subjects that their parents and grandparents had kept private. There were popular books and shows about unmarried mothers and about homosexuality. The growing film industry made films about all-night parties between unmarried men and women. And people discussed the new ideas about sex formed by Sigmund Freud and other new thinkers. An important force behind these changes was the growing independence of American women. In 1920, the nation passed the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, which gave women the right to vote. Of equal importance, many women took jobs during the war and continued working after the troops returned home. Also, new machines freed many of them from spending long hours of work in the home, washing clothes, preparing food, and doing other jobs.
Education was another important force behind the social changes of the 1920s. More and more Americans were getting a good education. The number of students attending high school doubled between 1920 and 1930. Many of the schools now offered new kinds of classes to prepare students for useful jobs. Attendance at colleges and universities also increased greatly, and colleges offered more classes in such useful subjects as teacher training, engineering, and business administration. Two inventions also helped cause the social changes. They were the automobile and the radio. The automobile gave millions of Americans the freedom to travel easily to new places, and the radio brought new ideas and experiences into their own homes. Probably the most important force behind social change was the continuing economic growth of the 1920s. Many people had extra money to spend on things other than food, housing, and other basic needs. They could experiment with new products and different ways of living.
Of course, not all Americans were wearing strange new flapper clothes or dancing until early in the morning. Millions of Americans in small towns or rural areas continued to live simple, quiet lives. Life was still hard for many people, including blacks, foreigners, and other minority groups. The many newspaper stories about independent women reporters and doctors also did not represent the real life of the average American woman. Women could vote, but three of every four women still worked at home. Most of the women working outside their homes were from minority groups or foreign countries. The films and radio stories about exciting parties and social events were just a dream for millions of Americans. But the dreams were strong, and many Americans, rich and poor, followed with great interest each new game, dance, and custom.
The wide interest in this kind of popular culture was unusually strong during the 1920s. People became extremely interested in exciting court trials, disasters, film actors, and other subjects. For example, millions of Americans followed the sad story of Floyd Collins, a young man who became trapped while exploring underground. Newsmen reported to the nation as rescue teams searched to find him. Even the New York Times newspaper printed a large story on its front page when rescuers finally discovered the man's dead body. Another event that caught public attention was a murder trial in the eastern state of New Jersey in 1926. Newsmen wrote 5 million words about this case of a minister found dead with a woman member of his church. Again, the case itself was of little importance from a world news point of view, but it was exciting. And Americans were tired of reading about serious political issues after the bloody World War.
The 1920s also were a golden period for sports. People across the country bought newspapers to read of the latest golf victory by champion Bobby Jones. Big Bill Tilden became the most famous player in tennis. And millions of Americans listened to the boxing match in 1926 between Jack Dempsey and Gene Tunney. In fact, five Americans reportedly became so excited while listening to the fight that they died of heart attacks. However, the greatest single sports hero of the period was the baseball player Babe Ruth. Ruth was a large man who could hit a baseball farther than any other human being. He became as famous for his wild enjoyment of life as for his excellent playing on the baseball field. Babe Ruth loved to drink, to be with women, and to play with children.
The most famous popular event of the 1920s was neither a court trial nor a sports game. It was the brave action of pilot Charles Lindbergh when he flew an airplane across the Atlantic Ocean without stopping. He was the first man in history to do this. Lindbergh flew his plane alone from New York to France in May 1927. His flight set off wild celebrations across the United States. Newspapers carried story after story about Lindbergh's success. President Coolidge and a large crowd greeted the young pilot when he returned to Washington. And New York congratulated Lindbergh with one of the largest parades in its history. Americans liked Lindbergh because he was brave, quiet, and handsome. He seemed to represent everything that was best about their country.
The 1920s were also a time of much excellent work in the more serious arts. We will take a look in our next program at American art, writing, and building during the exciting, roaring 20s.
Our program was written by David Jarmel. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.